But you have to realize the war was being won by the time we landed in Sicily in 1943. The Russians had changed the aspect of the war, started to raise at that time. Mm-hmm. And we were there to put the coup de grace on, I suppose, you might call it.
Well, I guess it saved Western Europe from the Russians.
That's right. Oh, yes.
Which is true.
That was the attitude then, too.
It was?
Yeah.
People were aware that
you
were in a race.
In fact, after the war was declared, it stopped. I thought, well, why shouldn't we go into Russia now? Now, that feeling was there.
Mm. I guess maybe the Russians were thinking the same thing.
They were thinking the same thing.
I've a couple of the people I interviewed, and I've heard it on other tapes, used the expression shooting the infantry onto the objective. But I didn't ask him at the time. I'm wondering if you know what that expression means.
Supporting the infantry, yes.
I'm wondering if they sit back and shoot at the objective until the infantry gets onto it.
That's what they did. That's the only answer when you're fighting on roads and that sort of thing. That's all you can do. Mm-hmm. Was to give artillery, you might say, artillery support to the infantry, and for the infantry to point out various objectives to fire at.
Mm-hmm. Bob Rogers said that they also had a kind of arrangement with the Air Force in Northwest Europe where they would shoot tracers at their target, knowing that they couldn't, that their guns weren't strong enough to penetrate, that the target was dug in. But they would shoot tracers to indicate to the typhoons who were circling overhead.
Beautiful.
The typhoons would come in.
Beautiful typhoons. Boy, I tell you, the Air Force saved the day.
Was that in Italy as well, or basically in Northwest Europe?
No. We had the odd lightning, and we had the odd, I don't know what they were, the odd one diving down now and then. But that's all. They just dove down and fired machine guns at them and dropped into small balls or something. But we didn't have typhoons.
So your experience with them was in Northwest Europe?
Northwest Europe, but they did the job. Boy. The roads were just blocked with German war machines.
Knocked out?
Oh, just
rockets?
Lines of them knocked out.
And did you, when you came to Northwest Europe, were you, your units, say, indoctrinated in the, coordinating with typhoons and the technique?
No, not our unit, no. All we did was hold.
So hold German positions?
Hold German positions.
Where they
pockets
were.
Of Germans. That's all we used to support.
I guess that would be a relief after having fought for
a
year and a half longer than
that's right.
Than
I
anyone
think
else.
That's what they thought. And they knew the war was coming to a climax.
Were any of your troops taken from your units to reinforce the units from the other Canadian units that were engaged?
Well, I was. Like we...
You were moved?
I was moved. I was moved from at the end of Sicily. No, I guess it was at the end of Sicily. But I was moved, went back to England, and was put in with the Governor General's foot guards. And we gave them talks and that sort of thing about action and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. This would have been in early 44.
In 44 and just before D-Day.
Right.
And it was about a month before D-Day, I guess. Well, a couple of months before D-Day. And we were attached to the Germans with guards, but just as the Governor General Foot Guards were going over to the to Normandy, I came down with malaria again. Because I'd caught malaria, I'd had malaria in the system as well. It was terrible. 105 temperatures coming out or something.
Oh.
But anyway, I didn't go over with the Governor General's Foot Guards because I was sent to hospital in England.
And so where were you sent back? Where were you sent to when you got well?
When I got well, I went back to Italy again.
Oh, darn.
And I joined the same outfit again.
Well, in Northwest Europe, people I've talked to said that almost instantly they were short of replacements. The people who came up were untrained. They were 3 days after D-Day, in fact. They were receiving replacements with no training.
Yeah.
When did you, at what level or what time in your campaigning did you encounter this problem? Did you have the same problem of replacements who weren't trained?
Well, I don't know what you mean by that. Well, trained, they weren't used to fighting. They were trained, but they were not in action.
Well, Bob Rogers got a gunner who'd never actually fired a gun. A wireless operator who was actually a cook. You know,
No, we never were like that.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
How many tanks did you go through during the course of the war?
Changed tanks a good many times. But I don't know how many now.
Okay. Was your regiment usually assigned to the same infantry regiment to work with?
No, we fought with whoever wanted us. We fought with the Canadians, as I say, and we fought with the British.
Did you fight with the Indian Army? Or not the Indian Army, but with Indian troops?
With Indian troops, yes. We fought with Indian troops as well.
And what were they like to fight with? Were they
Indian troops? Very, very good fighters. Very good fighters. They had the, like the Poles, I guess, they had a streak of fighting in them that was born in them, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was very noticeable. But they lost a lot of people, a lot of personnel. Because of it.
By the end of the war, what proportion of your original complement was still with the regiment?
Well, I would say maybe 15%, something like that.
Were the
I don't know about the men. I'm talking about officers. I don't know about the men.
Did officers usually, after being wounded return to the regiment, or were they likely to just go to any tank regiment?
No, they were usually end up going back to the same regiment.
So the fact that you were 15% meant the rest had been wounded enough to never come back or killed?
It's strange, because you got to know all the officers in the regiment, whether you were in England, in the rear. But then, as time went on, in short time sometimes, you'd have these get-togethers, or not get-togethers, but they happened to be regimental thing, and you wouldn't see them again. Now, what happened to them, you never knew whether they were killed, or what happened to them.
Posted
to some other assignment, or left the regiment, or whatever. You don't know what the reasons were.
And you didn't ask?
Didn't ask.
Because you didn't want to know?
If you knew a friend or somebody, you might have mentioned it, but that's all.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of that happening. It did happen. There were a few grudges that were at first that had to be ironed out, I suppose.
Grudges?
Well, between officers in there that had got into problems in England and that sort of thing. And they got ironed out on the battlefield, sort of thing. But that happened, I'm quite sure, because those people disappeared too. All of a sudden, they were gone. It still amazes me what happened. I still wonder what happened to them.
Did you ever buy the regimental history and look it up?
No, they wouldn't say anything like that. I mean, no.
Oh, okay. No. Not if they were sent back with battle fatigue.
No. I don't think so. But, it wasn't just that battle fatigue impact. But I mean, just accidentally
shooting your foot?
Or shooting someone else.
Okay.
You know, I mean, those things happen.
And they weren't accidents?
They weren't accidents, no. Yeah, well, I mean, those grudges, it was the odd one, not very, I would say that was minimal. But that's human nature.
Yeah. I'm wondering, by the end of the war, had your regiment managed to keep supplied with French Canadian recruits, or had the proportion changed of French speakers?
No, they were gradually getting more French Canadians.
They were?
Officers, I guess.
At the start, was it mostly French Canadian other ranks and English officers?
No, it was a mixture. It was a mixture.
So gradually through the war, more French speaking officers?
They really wanted it to turn into a French regiment.
But continued to speak at a command level in English?
In English, that's right. Well, they had to during the war.
Instructions from above?
Instructions from above.
So the French officers speak to their own men in French, is that basically, a tank commander to his own crew?
No, I spoke in English. Because there was a mixture.
Okay. That worked out okay?
It worked out well. As far as I was concerned, anyway.
And, Did you experience, as the war went on, a increasing confidence from, say, your commanders, people above you? Did you find that they were getting better, or they were getting replaced by people who were better, like your colonel, your brigadier, that kind of thing?
No, it's just our colonel left, one that I said got into trouble with. He left, he became brigadier of the 4th Division.
Oh, okay. Brigadier of the brigade, the tank brigade.
No, he went back off the 4th Division in Normandy.
Oh, okay.
He was sent back and became brigadier.
Was that the right
thing? He got killed.
That's right. Right in the middle of the Battle of Normandy.
Yeah. Okay. They went back the wrong road or something.
Yeah. A lot of people, that sort of turned out to be a fundamental skill everywhere, was being able to read maps and be on the right road, it sounds like.
So that was my old regiment, the BC regiment.
Right. Mind you, they were navigating at night.
They were navigating at night.
Easy task.
We didn't realize there was a fork in the road. So they got over the road, but it was all in the forks. And we ended up right in the middle of a German, apparently, tanks.
Near the division headquarters.
Yeah.
Right under Kurt Meyer's steely gaze.
So, yeah.
All right, Matt. Well, this is more or less all my questions answered.
Yeah, I'm sorry it was sort of mixed up, but anyway.
Well, maybe, we've got a little bit on the tape. Maybe I could ask you to say some more about Ortona. Was that the most interesting? Interesting is a banal word to use. Was that the most important engagement you were in?
Ortona, I think it was. I lost a lot of friends in Ortona. We went through...
In your own regiment?
In your own regiment.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Germans had mine early as well. And, I was on the right going in through the grape arbors and that sort of grapevines, and on the right down in the gully. And this friend of mine, Tommy Wickham, was on the road going in, and someone else was on the left flank. I was on the right flank. And of course, we were being pounded with HEs and that, and you could feel the explosion under the tank, even, you know, the jarring and that sort of thing. But I looked over, and Tommy was on the road, of course. I saw this tank, and the sparks and the smoke, it was straight up in the air the whole time, 32 tons of it. The Germans had
thrown into the air.
Lifted right up. The Germans had mined this road, and I guess they waited until he got out with his tank, the tank on the road. And I guess they pressed the button and nothing went. The guys were just up ahead, and the Germans were up ahead. But the infantry took them prisoner. One of those things that you thought should have taken the prisoner or not.
I guess it was your friend.
That's the feeling you had.
Sure. Well, I understand the Germans had mines that kind of timers on them, so that they would not go off for the first vehicle or the second vehicle or the third vehicle, but then on the fourth vehicle or something, they would blow up.
I don't know if they had that. They did. But this was the first vehicle on the road.
Mm-hmm. In this case?
Yeah. Just on the left. And I was down below. There was something there. Nothing went.
So how long was your was the Three Rivers Regiment in Ortona?
Oh, a couple of weeks, I guess. Roughly that. Over Christmas.
Yeah, that's right.
It was
Christmas.
Muddy and it was... But it was well defended, it was well fought. The infantry got a lot of prisoners, I think. But Royal Edmonton lost a lot of men. I remember them coming out in Bren gun carriers. It was cold, of course. The Bren gun carriers, one after the other, were just filled with corpses. Clean corpses.
Right.
It was terrible for a while there. Then on the way in, certain these towns, well, in Ortona, I looked down once on this, and I was close to, I guess the buildings were closer to the roads anyway, but I'd stopped and I looked down and there's a window down below street level. I looked down, there was a window. There was this old woman praying with her gray, silver hair. She was in there praying. Like this stuff. And here I was firing away with my tank. I was just outside her window or something. It was a strange feeling.
Yeah, two different universes.
Yeah.
We were in there. What were you usually firing at in Ortona? Just simply buildings that somebody told
buildings.
You to fire at?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the fire buildings. And the weather.
Oh, I don't know.
What day. I used to bounce. Sometimes I'd bounce an AP on the road just to wake up a few people in me, because they're all stone buildings. I use smoke sometimes to let the infantry go ahead under smoke, because everything was under fire. And, if they could get any cover at all, it was helpful.
Well, did you have smoke projectors on your tank?
Yeah.
That's
how
you did that?
Yeah. Smoke projectors. They didn't go too far, but they went up ahead 40 or 50 feet. Use those. But Ortona was a long, stupid battle inside of town was something else. You fought until you didn't eat, you didn't go to the bathroom, you were just in a state of adrenaline. Your body was strictly 90% adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
You were just tightened up. You didn't realize it. You didn't realize at the time. Your senses were key to that one, because you had to be aware of everything. And you didn't know what was happening. It was one of those, you couldn't just sit back and plan things much. You had to be aware of the things at the moment. Because in the towns it was that way.
And so, for instance, at Artona, for how long would you be in this state of adrenaline high? I mean, for days, or would you get to sleep at all?
Well, we'd be in action for 30 days in a row sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
We'd never have a shower or bath, and then we ate maybe some hardtack, you know, open up a can of bully beef and eat that, and sleep. You would sleep in your tank in a good many cases because you were
so you would just sit down, basically, and go to sleep sitting down in your seat?
Sitting down, you know, instead of standing up, you'd sit down on a little pad, you might say.
Yeah.
And you'd stay there. To go outside, it was, you know, you're just asking for a problem. No, we used to do that. Turn on the radio and listen to Lily Marlene sung by various German people asking you, why are you fighting? Why are you doing this? Why don't you join us and stop this war and all this sort of stuff? And I couldn't just see that.
Did they ever give you information about that was intended to destroy your morale? Things going.
But we knew that.
Churchill and Roosevelt plotting this.
Oh, yeah, that went on. We knew that, of course.
Did you see many German prisoners?
Oh, yeah.
Or ever question German prisoners?
No, a lot of them. No, most of them were. They were shaken.
Mm-hmm.
They were just like this, you know, they were gaunt. You thought that they hadn't eaten. You'd think, well, you'd see the destitute people. They're absolutely destitute. Not destitute, but went through your mind, had they eaten for the last 30 days, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't washed, they've been absolutely shaken.
They sound like you. I mean, they sound,
yeah.
In a way, they sound like your description of yourself.
That's
not
right.
Having eaten or washed for 30 days.
That's right.
But maybe hungrier than you guys are.
That's right, yeah. Oh, it was different. No, we did. And then the person all the dead bodies around there was somebody. Some nice looking German officer. I remember him lying there. I don't know if I killed him or not, but I shouldn't have thought of him. You know, he had a picture of Hitler inside his jacket.
I don't imagine. Too many Canadians were carrying pictures of Mackenzie King inside their jacket.
Beautiful guy, but we were young in those days, you know, Mike or Steve.
Steve.
We were young in those days. I was 23 when I landed. Same age as my grandson, one of my grandsons, 23 years old. And the German troops were young.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy boy. What good did it do?
Take a more positive attitude than that. I hope that some good was done.
Oh, I think some good was done, that's true. But,
Hitler was stopped, and Stalin was stopped.
And Stalin was stopped.
Halfway across Germany, which turned out to be a very good thing.
Even though they decided to divide the world up between Roosevelt and Stalin, and just booted old Churchill out. And that's what caused the East and the West. Stalin was to control the East and Roosevelt the West. That's how the Cold War started. That was all arranged in Yalta.
Well, that brings our interview to an end. Thanks very much.
Okay.